This is Sunday Golds, a Florida State baseball podcast. Today is Friday. FSU begins their series at Pitt today, later this afternoon at night at 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock game to start off the series, 3 o'clock on Saturday and 1 o'clock on Sunday. But you know, first off, you know, just want to say hope everyone that's in Tallahassee is okay and safe. You know, luckily for myself, I'm down in Tampa this week. I left Tallahassee after the game on Tuesday, so not there to see the damage myself, but from the videos and photos I've seen and some that Chris Nee has sent me, it looks pretty bad and like some of the worst we've seen, and at least in my time in Tallahassee, I don't think I've seen any worse damage than there is there today. So for those of you that are there, just hope that you're safe and okay and doing well and things get fixed up and power comes back on and all that stuff as quick as possible. And you know, start with that with Hauser. You know, I'm sure you've seen by now, if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably seen the damage that Dick Hauser Stadium took from the storm and the tornadoes that touched ground in Tallahassee. Good bit of damage at Hauser, the right field fence, not completely off the wall, but knocked back and down. Most of it knocked off that you know, knocked back off the brick wall in right field, as well as the foul pole is down and lots of tree damage and stuff. There's a big tree down in front of the home plate gate to get into Hauser. You know, I think the scoreboard took some damage as well. The netting in front of the scoreboard looked like it came down, and I think the where it says Dick Hauser or Mike Martin Field or Dick Hauser Stadium, I think it says Mike Martin Field there on the bottom of the scoreboard. I think that part of the scoreboard has also kind of fallen off and taken some damage. So probably a lot to assess for FSU this weekend, not just at Hauser, but all over campus. I mean, the circus tent looks like it's gone, or I don't know exactly what the situation is there, but it looked like only bleachers were left at the circus. So, a lot for FSU to figure out this weekend, obviously, and going forward for the baseball stadium. Next home game is supposed to be next Thursday for a 3-game set against Georgia Tech. But and then, you know, obviously regionals, 2 weekends after that, regionals start on March 31st. So not much time before your next series at home, but there is still 3 weeks until regionals to try to get stuff fixed. I know there's going to be lots of questions about how it affects regionals and how fast this stuff can get fixed. I'm not going to have any answers to that. I don't know if anybody but the people actually going there and working and assessing the damage and people that have worked at the stadium and on the fence and stuff before, I'm sure those are the only people that will have answers to those questions. I don't really know the process of fixing that stuff and getting them and getting everything back in order, but you hope that everything can get fixed as fast as possible. But we'll see. Obviously sad to see Hauser like that and sad to see all of Tallahassee like that. It looked like Railroad Square took some really bad damage in some other places. So like I said, just hope that everybody's doing okay, and hope that all this stuff can get fixed as fast as possible, and especially at Hauser, so you can still hopefully hope a regional if you take care of business these next couple of weeks. First part of taking care of business for FSU is a trip to Pitt this weekend. Like I said, teams on their way there, and you know, Link is really, really close. It's the second straight week for Link having a pretty close relationship with the other staff. Obviously, last week it was his son and Elliot Aven and Chris Hart. But this week, you know, Mike Bell is the head coach at Pitt, obviously a former Seminole and a former pitching coach at Florida State. Coach Bell and Link are very close. Coach Bell was here for Mike Martin Sr.'s memorial in the preseason, and he actually stuck around for a practice and a scrimmage. I think he spent some time at Township with all the other former players, and then was actually at a scrimmage, watched a scrimmage with myself. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. It was pretty funny just to see him and Link interact during that time. But they're very close. They talk a lot. Link talked yesterday about how much they've talked just through the process of both of them coming up in the coaching industry since the time they were coaching at JUCO at the same time. So they bounce a lot of stuff off each other, talk very often. And I don't think Link loves having these weekends. It's awkward, and you know, nobody comes. Both people can't come out a winner. But it's a relationship that, you know, it's always going to be someone that's, I think, is on in Link's inner circle and someone that he talks to often and relies on. And, you know, I think even Link talked about the past 2 years that he actually lives in Coach Bell's house in Tallahassee. It was a house that Coach Bell built and designed and was going to live in. And he was only living in it for 4 days before he got hired by Pitt to be their head coach. And after, I think, another family lived in there for a little bit, by the time Link was coming to Tallahassee and looking for a house, Bell's house was back on sale, and they ended up in it, and still the same way that Bell left it when he built it. So it'll be an interesting weekend for those two coaches. And for the same thing goes for Ty McGay, who's now FSU's recruiting coordinator and was the recruiting coordinator for Bell at Pitt for a few years, and Bryce Hewlett, who's on FSU's staff, was a player at Pitt for Bell, was a first baseman for a while, and had some success there, but he's on FSU's staff now. I believe he's the grad assistant on FSU's staff and helps out a good bit with the hitters this year. For the series, FSU will be entering this weekend with the same exact pitching rotation as the last couple weekends. Jamie Arnold, Carson Dorsey, TBD. I think, you know, for Jamie, like I said earlier this week, I think last week's, you know, only getting the shortened start because of the weather is a little bit of a blessing in disguise, just because of how many pitches he had thrown over the last course of the last 8 weeks or so. And the work he had done. So I think maybe you get a fresher version of Jamie, a little bit sharper version of Jamie. I think we see a very good version of Jamie here on Friday against Pitt. And Pitt has struggled this year in ACC play offensively. So I think this is a good weekend for both Arnold and Dorsey to put together some strong starts if they're sharp and in the strike zone. And Jamie's been in the strike zone as much as anybody this year. The K-to-walk ratio, 5.94. Still top 10 in the NCAA in strikeouts and ERA, 2.37 ERA, 101 strikeouts. So I think, you know, the thing you'll want to see the most with Jamie this week is a little bit more whiff. I think the last week, the NC State not whiffing had more to do with them. Like, they just don't. That's their identity. They don't strike out. They strike out the least to anybody in the ACC. But I think Jamie can get swings and misses at a high rate against this Pitt offense. And same thing with Dorsey as well. Dorsey has 11.38 K per nine this year. So like the two opportunity for both these guys to go out there and get some good numbers and some whiffs this weekend, I think, against an offense that is dead last in pretty much every category in ACC play, of ACC teams. So, you know, as long as you're in the strike zone, I think you're going to have a chance to have success against the Pitt offense. And Link mentioned yesterday on Connor Whitaker that he's thrown a couple full go bullpens that have been about 25 pitches in the last week or two here, and that's pretty much where they feel like he'll be around right now on the pitch count out of the bullpen. I think he also mentioned there's a possibility that he could be the opener on Sunday. That likely just depends on how the first 2 days go. Like we've talked about a lot, like Sunday at this point is just get through the first two games and figure it out when you get there, whatever you have available. Just piece it together from there. I would like to see FSU take advantage of Pitt offensively at the plate as well. Like, Pitt's not good on the mound. Their three weekend starters all have ERAs above 5.43. Friday starter has an 8.39 ERA. FSU's offense hasn't really kind of broke out in a little bit. You know, they haven't scored 10-plus runs since the North Florida game in the midweek a couple weeks ago. Haven't scored 10-plus runs in an ACC game since the Miami series. And it's not like the offense has been super quiet or that. It's just we haven't seen them at full go in a little bit, I don't think. Like, some guys have been in slump. Some guys have been hot, but like it's been a while since everything was clicking in the offense, it feels like, and maybe that's just what it is at this point. But this is a weekend that you feel like is a get right opportunity, a weekend that you should put up some crooked numbers. And I think the thing with the offense recently is it feels like they put up one crooked number and they go quietly after that, and you hope that this weekend they can put up a crooked number early and continue to build off that and really build some offensive momentum. But, I mean, offensively this year, FSU still, the numbers are still really decent. And whenever you look in ACC or nationally, like, most of the numbers are still in a pretty good spot. Batting average, number 12 in the country, number 4 in the ACC. Home runs, number 24 in the country. Home runs per game, number 2 in the ACC with 1.89. So you're still doing mostly what you need to do. I just think this is a weekend where I would like to see the offense go out there and really put it to a pitching staff that has struggled this year, and a pitching staff that's struggled for a few years now, really. You know, going into this weekend, Cam Smith, his on-base streak is still alive. Looking at some of the numbers here, it's crazy. 24 of the 56 games in the streak, Cam's extended the on-base streak in the first inning 24 times. He's only taken it into the ninth inning once, and the other day in the eighth inning was only the second time it's gone that deep as well. Buster Posey has the on-base streak record with 67 games. So right now Cam is 11 away from that, still a ways to go. Seventh longest right now in program history, but yeah, pretty cool to see how many times he's been able to extend that in his very first plate appearance of a game. So we'll see if he's able to keep that going through this weekend. Tibbs as well, just wanted to mention where he's at now on the home runs list. He's up to number 8 in the career home runs in program history. A couple home runs behind Paul Sorrento for number 7 and tied for number 8 with Jeremy Morris. I don't think he's going to reach Jeff Ledbetter's 97 career home runs, but just to see him in the top 10 is really cool, and I think that just shows you how much of an impact he's had here in the last 3 years, and especially this year. I think he's someone at this point that is even getting some top 10 buzz in the draft. So, yeah, I think this is it's been a really good year for James, and it's going to pay off for him, I think, when it comes to July and the draft rolls around. So, Just a couple notes offensively for FSU going into this weekend. For Pitt, their starters this week will be Ryan Andrade, Jack Sokol, and Ryan Reed. Andrade has an 8.39 ERA in 12 starts. He's throwing 49 innings, has a 3.05 average against, has allowed 11 home runs, 55 Ks to 33 walks. Sokol, 5.43 ERA. 2.94 average against, 7 home runs allowed, 49 Ks, 26 walks, and 61 innings. Ryan Reed, the Sunday starter, 7.43 ERA and 11 starts and 49 innings, 3.23 average against with 32 extra base hits allowed and 49.2 innings, and 10 of those being home runs. So, like I said, it is a pitching staff that FSU's offense should have success against. And offensively for Pitt, they're dead last in batting average, slugging percentage, runs scored, hits, RBIs, doubles, triples, home runs, and stolen bases per game in the ACC. So, yeah, it's not pretty to look at their stats. They're 21-25 overall. They're 6-18 in the conference, which is dead last in the ACC right now. 9-12 at home this year. Some of the guys offensively that stand out for them, Luke Cantwell is hitting .348 with 9 home runs. Jaden Melendez, his catcher, has team-high 13 home runs, but is only hitting .220. But he's played in every single one of their games. Dom Papa, who I think feels like he's been there for a bit of time, .333 average with a .445 on-base percentage. They don't steal bases, really, only 17 stolen bases in 26 attempts this year. Fielding percentage isn't very good, only .969 fielding percentage. So there's not too much that you look at here and you say they do that well. There's just, and I mean, that's how you end up with a 6-18 record in ACC play. So I think, you know, the one person who's had a really good year for them on their pitching staff, Phil Fox, short right-hander with a 1.19 ERA and 19 appearances in 30 innings. He's only walked 3 batters in 30 and a third, compared to 36 strikeouts and only allowed one home run in those 19 appearances, with a 1.96 average against, which allows him to get 6 saves on the year, which is by far a team high. This is a series that FSU should be able to handle. Obviously, you have to go up to Pitt. It's like BC. Like, I don't think it's going to be nearly as cold as it was when you were at BC, but, like, there's not going to be that many people there. You got to bring your own energy. You got to be able to just like you got to show up and you got to be able to play with the same intensity and energy that you would play with in front of a big crowd and somehow just find that in yourself to do it. And, you know, FSC took 2 of 3 at BC earlier this year. We'll see what they do at Pitt. Obviously, you definitely need a series win and a sweep, I think, would go a long way. And your RPI wouldn't be hurt at all if you get a sweep this weekend. So I think even if you lose 1 of 3 this weekend, you might drop a little bit in RPI. Obviously, that depends on what other people around you do. But as of right now, I think Pitt is number 99 in RPI, which makes them a quad 2 opponent because it's a road game. And quad 2 opponents go all the way up to number 120 on the road. So I think Pitt will stay in that quad 2 region for you no matter what. Stetson, who's going to be your upcoming midweek, is actually a quad 2 as well. They're right kind of on the edge of that 120 right now. But since you're playing them on the road, it's a quad 2. And Georgia Tech, who your last opponent is right on the edge of being a quad 2 right now at number 50. And you're going to play them at home, which is number 50 is the line for quad 2s at home. So still work for FSU to do and still, you know, a long way to go here with 7 games. It feels like it's taken forever to end the season now. Once you get to this point, it just feels like things kind of slow down just because, you know, it's getting tight and, you know, you get little tension with all the RPI and all the, you know, projections and stuff like that, and hoping that you're able to hold on to a national seed potentially, and definitely hope that you can hold on to being a regional host with some success over the last, you know, little home stretch here. And I think you have the schedule in front of you to have success still. Like, you should be able to take care of business the next 7 games, even with some of the guys you have down right now. So I think it should be a good weekend for FSU up at Pitt. You know, moving on to some regional talk. I wrote an article yesterday about FSU still being a projected top 8 national seed by both D1 Baseball and Baseball America. Both those outlets have FSU as the number 7 seed right now. I think the regional projections they had kind of differed a little bit. Both of them had Troy as the 2 seed right now. D1 Baseball had UCF as the 3 seed and FAMU as the 4 seed, while Baseball America had Bethune-Cookman as the 4 seed and Florida as the 3 seed. Baseball America has FSU paired with number 10 Oklahoma. Actually, both of them do. Difference between those two, just with the surrounding teams around FSU, that they had kind of different on their rankings on their host numbers. D1 Baseball had UNC number 6, East Carolina number 8, and Indiana State number 9. Baseball America actually had Oregon State number 9 and UNC up to number 5 with Arkansas at number 6 and ECU still at number 8. So those are some of the teams around you right now that are worth paying attention to: Indiana State, ECU, Oregon State. And then I think you really need to pay attention to some ACC teams as well, because, you know, I think Ari and I talking, if we think that there will be likely 3 ACC teams among the top 8 seeds, and probably a couple more, maybe 3 more, in those last 8 regional hosts. So I think, you know, right now Clemson and UNC are ahead of you, both in national seed projections and in the ACC. They're both, those teams are 17-7 in the conference. Right now you're 14-9. Virginia and Duke are both right behind you at 14-10. NC State's also 13-10. Wake Forest is 12-12. There's just a lot of teams bunched up. I think right now NC State and Wake Forest are both projected as 2 seeds, while Duke and Virginia are projected as regional hosts. You know, all three of those teams are worth paying attention to still. You know, Wake Forest, even though they're a 2 seed right now, is still someone who could potentially get up into conversations with you because they're playing Clemson this weekend. So if they were to take a series from Clemson, it likely gives them a big boost. And they already have the head-to-head against you, so you don't really want Wake Forest to get near you, I don't think. You know, you have the head-to-head over Duke, which is good for you. And I think GT and Duke play this week, and I think you'd probably want Georgia Tech to win that series because you're playing Georgia Tech next weekend. That would boost them up farther from the number 50 ranking in RPI, which would further them you would solidify them for, as a quad two opponent for you next weekend, which it would go a long way, I think, rather than having them as a quad three opponent just for RPI and strength schedule purposes and that stuff. Virginia's right on your tail, too. I believe they play Louisville this weekend. And I think Louisville coming out of that series with a win would be good for you, even though Louisville's kind of right on your tail still in the ACC standings. I think they're 13-11, one and a half games behind you because of the game that you didn't have. Actually, I take that back. Louisville is playing UNC. It's NC State that's playing Virginia. I think UVA is the team that's closest to you right now, probably in the national seed picture. So, and it's all a little bunched up. It's all bunched up in the ACC right now. But when it comes to the national seed picture and what people have for the ACC right now, I think it's one, Clemson, which is pretty solidified as a national seed. Two, UNC, who's getting pretty close to locking up their national seed with all the wins they've racked up, but they still have a couple series here that are important for them. I mean, Clemson does too. Clemson needs to at least go get one at Wake Forest, I think. But yeah, I think one, Clemson, two, UNC, three, FSU, four, Virginia, five, Duke, six, seven, probably both be Wake Forest. So I think all those teams from the ACC are still in the mix to host a regional, and you want to be ahead of some, you want to stay ahead of some of those other teams, both with your ACC record because of trying to be a top four seed at the ACC tournament, but also just because you know, for one, you don't have a head to head loss against Wake Forest. Luckily, you do have a head to head win over Duke. Obviously, you split two games with NC State, so no real damage there. But yeah, it's just, this is something that is still developing, obviously. And you just, if you take care of business and you win the last two series, I think you're a national seed. If you were to win one series and lose one series, you probably got to go do some real work and do some real damage in the ACC tournament. If you lost both of those series, you know, you're definitely in danger of missing out on a regional host to that point. But, you know, I think with Pitt this weekend, you expect to at least get a series win there. You need to do that. You need to go take care of business there and get your wins there to further your ACC record and try to solidify yourself as a top four seed for that tournament, which just makes the week in Charlotte a lot easier for you. But like I said, there's still a lot of baseball left to be played. You don't know what all these other teams are going to do. There's a lot of movement around you. So just a lot to kind of track right now. But as of right now, you're still in a really good standing. A 1-1 week, you know, it didn't really hurt you at all. I think Baseball America had you number 6 last week, but D1 Baseball already had you number 7. So things really haven't changed too much in that picture recently. So still in good standing. And I'm going to do some mailbag questions from the Knowles 247 board here. We were going to do an interview this week, but you know, with some of the weather stuff and also some just like scheduling changes for FSU, we weren't able to get Jamie Arnold this week. We're still hoping to get him soon. And I was going to talk to Chris Snee this morning for an interview, but then he didn't have power this morning and was wanting to get over to campus to take some pictures of the damage and stuff. So didn't get to talk to him either, but you know, just going to do a mailbag instead, and you know, just try to answer some of these questions that are on Knowles 247 board. You know, a couple of them are about the damage at Hauser. Like I said, I just don't really have answers for that right now. Maybe we'll be able to get some answers on Tuesday at Stetson from Link, but even, you know, I think Link's not even there right now, and he'll be on phones and stuff, I'm sure, trying to figure out what's going on. But yeah, there's not much to add right now on that stuff, but we'll do. Let's see, some of these questions here. Someone asked, Eric777 asked, chances of Dingus and Ferrer returning next year. You know, as of right now, I think Jaime is a little bit more of a question, I think, than Dingus. Obviously, the thing with both of them, I think, is defense, but Jaime has shown some strides recently. Didn't just obviously he doesn't hasn't really shown himself to have a position. I think if he was to get drafted, it would be as a catcher, but he hasn't caught here this year outside of one game. You know, he's played some outfield in practices and scrimmages. I think that's something he could do. Maybe first base is something he could do too. But the bat right now, the bat to ball with the combination of his power and the exit velocities that he's putting out there on a pretty consistent basis. There's a lot of scouts that really like Dingus. They really like that bat to ball power combo, and I think it's going to be hard to pass up on. I do think Marco has another year of leverage because of a redshirt year in JUCO or something like that. I think he's listed as a redshirt sophomore right now. So I think both those situations are interesting. Obviously, Jaime is a junior this year, wouldn't really have much leverage next year, but I think it just depends on where we're talking about in the draft. Like, I think if it's top 10 rounds, both those guys would sign. I think if it wasn't top 10 rounds, then maybe they'd want to come back for another year and try to improve upon that. Obviously, Marco could come back and play a position, and Jaime maybe come back and try to put up even better numbers. But I think the thing Jaime wanted to do this year was improve the power numbers, and he did that. We'll see how it pays off for him in the draft. He's still hitting above 300. He's hit above 300 for 3 years at FSU. So I've been back and forth on Jaime's situation this year. I still think that's someone that will get interest in the draft, and it will probably just depend on what he wants to do at that point, if he wants to come back or sign for whatever he can get. And, you know, I think Jaime is still someone that deserves to be drafted and someone that deserves that chance. Like, he's going to hit. He always has hit. He's shown that for three straight years here, and he's going to hit for some power. He's going to hit doubles. Like, he's someone that is worth a flyer, I think. That bat has just been so consistent for 3 years here, and he's really tough. Like, he's played almost every single game here for 3 years as well. He's durable. And I think the outfield has shown – the outfield defense has shown strides this year, especially recently. A couple of the catches he's made running over towards the left field foul line have been really good recently. So we'll see with both of those situations. Like I said, though, I think Marco probably more likely than Jaime right now. But both of them will certainly have a chance to go in the draft. But I think you'll have a chance with both of them to try to retain them if you wanted to, and having those bats back next year with some of the other bats you're losing, and you know, it would be big to get their production back. But both of those guys are going to be guys that draw interest from the draft. J-Rod asks, what has changed from last year to this year? Is it players, is coaches, both? You know, I think it's just Link has talked a lot this year about the talent depth. I think the biggest thing for the offense has been the ability to hit the long ball and just change games with one swing. They've just hit, like, so many more homers this year. The depth of power 1 through 9 is a lot different than we've seen in recent years. And you know, that's not always everybody in your lineup hitting 10-plus, but just everybody in your lineup having the ability to do it and leave the yard. You know, I think even the guys at the bottom of your order, like, just having guys down there that have 3 to 6 home runs, like, that at least is somewhat of a power presence down there, and you make pitchers work. You have guys that come off the bench that are talented. You have guys that come off the bench that can fill roles. Pitching-wise, I know the depth this year, because injuries still isn't great, but there is more depth this year. There's more able and capable arms out there. I think the difference between this year and last year's pitching depth is, like, both of them struggled with command and getting the ball in the strike zone, but the guys that have struggled with command and getting the ball in the strike zone this year at least have stuff that belongs at this level, stuff that can get hitters out when it's in the strike zone, and it's stuff that is going to be, I think, beneficial for you down the road. Like, what you had last year, just some of those arms just weren't going to be beneficial for you, even if they were in the strike zone, just because the stuff nor the command was there with some of those arms. And I still believe in a lot of the freshman arms this year that FSU has that have struggled. Like, I believe in Brady Lauck. I believe in Hudson Rowan.
Believe in Matt Souser, John Abraham. Like, those guys have all had their ups and downs, but I still believe those guys are going to be real pieces for FSU down the road. And I couldn't have said that last year about some of the arms that were going out there when you got really, really far into the depth of it. And, you know, also this year, I think Jamie's just been so good. That's part of it. Like, J-Bomb, there were weeks last year as the Friday starter, J-Bomb was really, really good and one of the best Friday starters in the country. But there were also a lot of weeks that he was only able to give you three innings or so, due to efficiency and command and some people being able to get to the fastball curveball combo when one or the other wasn't on. So the consistency of Jamie week to week, I think, has been a big deal as well. I just think the overall talent of depth more than anything, and then also the defense, just playing solid defense and not killing yourself every day. Last year, the defense and the base running were both pretty awful last year and had been pretty awful for a while. But this year, they just haven't hurt you as much. And when you're not shooting yourself in the foot over and over again, it's a lot easier to win baseball games. And, you know, just getting off to that 19-0 start this year also helps big time. Like, the vibes in the locker room, everything about it, the confidence, all that stuff, just it goes way up. And I think that 19-0 start was just the beginning. It was able to give this team a lot of confidence from the very start of the season and be able to go out there and perform against teams like Florida, who you hadn't performed against in the past, and sweep a team like Miami when you should. Like, you do that stuff because you don't shoot yourself in the foot and you have more talent depth than most teams that you're playing right now. So let me see. Any more questions here? What player on the team this year that has gotten minimal ABs or innings are you most looking forward to see next year? You know, I think, you know, I guess would Cal Fisher still be in this group? I think, you know, Cal's gotten 49 at-bats at this point this year, hitting .286 with five home runs. I think we've seen the reasons to be optimistic about him. Just from the home runs in the small period of ABs he's gotten. You know, I think, like I said, I still with some of these pitchers too. I know you said ABs, but just reps and stuff. Like, Saucer hasn't thrown that much this year, only 9 innings, but I really like Saucer and what he showed throughout the fall and preseason. Andrew Duncan is someone who's extremely athletic and a very good defender in the outfield. I know one of the only opportunities he got early in the year, he dropped a fly ball, but I think Dunk is still someone who they believe is potential of being a really, really special defender in the outfield with his athleticism and his arm. And there's also a good bit of pop in that bat when he barrels it up. It's just, I think there's just some refinement to do with the plate discipline and approach there with Duncan. Riley Jackson behind the plate as well. I think Riley is someone who the coaching staff likes a lot behind the plate and someone that is going to be involved with the catching group next year more. Like, I think next year he's going to get an opportunity to potentially platoon maybe with Jackson West and just see what that bat and what his defense can give you. I think he is someone that will be back next year and someone that the coaching staff likes, especially what he can do for them behind the plate, kind of in a physical bat at the plate as well. So yeah, I think those are some of the guys that haven't played much this year that you can be looking forward to next year. Obviously they'll do some work in the transfer portal, and you have a lot of JUCO guys coming in, a lot of freshman guys coming in, and a lot of guys also leaving to the draft from this roster. So there's going to be a lot of transitioning. That's just what the sport is now. Like, every year is going to be a lot of transition where it's probably like 50% of your roster is back, 50% of it's gone, and you're bringing in a lot of guys. So, you know, when that time comes, we'll go through all that like we did last year, and I have some stuff on 247 about that soon, just where the roster at is, you know, where the roster is looking at going into next year with commitments from JUCO and high school and draft projections with your commits and also the guys on your roster. So, so I think that covers pretty much everything I wanted to talk about here on this podcast before the Pitt series begins. We'll talk again after the Pitt series and before the Stetson game, I believe. I'll be out at Stetson. I'll be covering Pitt games from the computer, watching the stream just like you. But just want to thank Alumni Hall for sponsoring the mailbag today. Alumni Hall is your ultimate FSU shopping experience. Shop top brands like Nike, Champion, Columbia, Comfort Colors, Johnny O, Onward Reserve, Southern Tide, New Era, Yeti, and more. Alumni Hall has seminal gear for the entire family, plus accessories and gifts. FSU students, faculty, and all military receive 10% off with ID by shopping in-store. Come see us in our new location on Timberlane Road near REI, or shop anytime online at alumnihall.com, where Seminole fans shop. So thanks for listening today. If you're able to hear this before the games get started this weekend, if you can, just leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Pods or Spotify, wherever you listen. That helps us out a lot, like Aria always says. Hopefully Aria will be back with me next week. I know I probably sound pretty boring by myself sometimes. Hope I don't put anybody to sleep. Hope you still enjoy the content and the talks, even without Aria here, still trying to keep everybody updated on what's going on with FSU baseball. So yeah, hopefully a successful weekend for Florida State as they continue to try to host regionals and keep that national seed standing intact. And we'll see how that goes, and we'll review all that, recap all that, and look ahead to the last weekend of the regular season early next week. So thanks again for listening. Hope everybody in Tallahassee is okay and safe from the storms and tornadoes, and hopefully Hauser is back to normal soon. But once again, thanks for listening. This has been Sunday Golds.